And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's Tuesday, February 27th. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris here with you on a busy, busy Tuesday. We've got team previews. Three more teams to go today. The Yankees, the Royals, and the White Sox. So yes, we closed the book on the AL Central, and we opened the book on the AL East. I figured it was the only way to try and get more than Royals and White Sox fans to listen to the team preview, was to glue the Yankees to the front of it.
Yeah, we didn't want all the AL East in one go. So,
you got to spread the fun around a little bit. Speaking of spreading the fun around, the Discord is popping. It is open. We'll put the link again in the show description, so be sure to jump in there if you haven't done so already.
That'll be a new invite link because I had somebody in my DMs saying the invite link was gone again, but we're doing new ones in each of them, right?
We'll keep making a fresh one. I'll try to make the new one good for longer. All right. That's the goal, anyway. Let's get right to it. Let's start with the Yankees, a really interesting team from a projection standpoint, one that actually had a winter that most of the fan base should be happy about because, hey, Yankees fans, you got Juan Soto. Look at him. Looks great in pinstripes, not even wearing pinstripes in the picture. You got two first-rounders from a fantasy perspective, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, probably two top 10 players in plenty of drafts. You still have Glaber. You got the young shortstop and Anthony Volpe who could get better. And you got a few of the old holdovers like Stanton, Rizzo, and DJ LeMahieu. You had Alex Verdugo in that trade with the Red Sox. They're going young at catcher with Austin Wells. It's a similar build, but with the addition of Soto, it's different in a very good way. That alone just changes the complexion of the lineup.
And I think, you know, it's unfair to characterize it too much as a fully veteran team because you have Volpe, you have Wells, and I'm still excited about Jason Dominguez. I think that's somebody that will make an impact on this season and on this organization. Just a lot of different tools and tools without necessarily missing the toolbox, I guess, you know, like they're not super unrefined tools. Like he has an idea, he has an approach. I think they've developed him pretty well. And Tommy John for hitters is not that big a deal. So I wouldn't be surprised if he came back a little bit earlier than people expected. And that he could step in for an unfortunate injury or just sort of force Stanton into and maybe Verdugo into some sort of a DH situation where, you know, they figure out basically a little bit of a roster crunch in outfield when Dominguez comes back, but that they push the defenders forward out onto the field. And for me, the best defenders are Dominguez, Judge, and well, is it Soto? I don't know. Fill in your third guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would probably be Dominguez, Grisham, and Judge would be your
very
three
best defense. Yeah.
But I think the way they're built now, they have got that depth. They have more defensive depth in their outfield, but they also have just a better collection of talent behind the star talent. So they have improved in some key ways. You mentioned something on yesterday's show about Aaron Judge that I thought was a little bit interesting because he made some comments about his toe saying it was something he'd have to manage for the rest of his career. I think some people take that and worry that it means missed time. I think it just means I have this new thing. I'm a little older. I had this injury. If I take care of it, I'll be fine. If I didn't take care of it, maybe it would cause me more problems. That's sort of how I interpreted those comments, but it does seem like other people are more on your side of that one where they're kind of saying, I don't know, Aaron Judge, pretty risky in the first round with that toe still bothering him. Judge, to me, continues to be one of those guys that you love to get in the back half of the first round if you end up drawing a spot back there, or if you're playing in an auction and you could try to get whatever combination of foundational hitters you want. He makes a ton of sense given the abundance of speed we talked about yesterday and the difficulty of getting power that doesn't come with the downside of a bad batting average.
Yeah, for sure. If he gets 620 plate appearances this year, he'll be a top three hitter in the league.
Yeah, so I just think that's awesome with Aaron Judge. Like, they've still got that cooked in. You know, Soto hitting in Yankee Stadium, there have been some debates about whether or not he's going to take full advantage of the short porch. That's still a really good projection. Even if he doesn't change anything with his approach, 36 homers on a 277 average and OBP north of 400.
And I think those runs and RBI totals that you see projected here, 108 runs, 97 RBI, that's low. If he gets to 660 plate appearances with what's likely to be like a 410 OBP, you're going to tell me he's only going to score 108 runs in this lineup? I don't know. I actually think that's low. I think he'll be like a 115, 120 runs, 105, 110 RBI. Like, he'll be a monster.
I think we talked about Gleyber Torres on our second base preview. Still really like him where he's going. He's quietly sort of creeping up draft boards. I think he's a common piece in a lot of builds where he's just someone that makes sense for people. He does a little bit of everything. He's good in average. He has power. He's a little above average in speed. The run production is going to be there because of the supporting cast. He's shown some growth as a hitter as far as just consolidating skills. Everything looks really good on Gleyber. If he keeps ticking up another round or two, maybe then he becomes a player I don't get as often, but I continually see him atop the queue late round five, early round six, and feel like I'm getting great value.
Yeah, him and Soto, both contract year guys. I went and found the piece of research on the Sabre website that I'd seen before about having a contract year status having an impact on your ability to stay on the field or on your plate appearances and innings pitched. So I think he's a high volume player who's basically above average and everything. It's kind of something that doesn't occur to some people when they're drafting, in terms of, you know, he's not going to help me with batting average. He's not going to, you know, my front three or front four, you know, are delinquent in this way. Like, I need him to patch things over for those four. He's not necessarily going to do that. But by taking somebody who's above average in every facet of the game, you forward yourself, you push your draft forward, staying above average. I mean, that's as difficult as, you know, not having holes that are springing up that you have to plug in.
And a lot of agreement across projection systems. The variance from system to system on Torres, very narrow. There's pretty much agreement of what he is likely to do in 2024.
Is Volpe the flip side of that?
Ooh, Volpe, yeah. Volpe, I mean, all the projection systems are seemingly a little light on Volpe. The biggest categorical range seems to be in his average. The lower end projections, 224. That comes from Zips. Higher end, I think, is 238 from the Bat X. I'd take the over, I think, even on that. I think there's reason to believe, given the plate skills he showed as a prospect and given how young he was at each stop, Anthony Volpe could lower the K rate a little bit more. He hit the ball hard last year, 42.7% hard hit rate. Wasn't pounding it in the ground at an exceedingly high rate. I just think there's a little more for him. He didn't really take advantage of Yankee Stadium. We talked about it before, the home road splits. You know, we're not good at home. I don't think that's a New York thing. I don't think that's an actual skill problem. So I see plenty of reasons to like Volpe. And I have heard some reports that he's changed his swing a little bit, trying to flatten that out. But we'll see what kind of results he gets from that.
I support that, I think. I think part of what was difficult for Volpe is that he had this extreme fly ball swing in the minors, at least. It didn't show that way in the majors. But an extreme fly ball swing is going to cut down on your batting average on balls in play. And he seemed to have gotten that poor batting average on balls in play without the fly ball. So, ironing it out a little bit. May also allow him to cut the K's a little bit, take advantage of what was a decent hard hit rate, decent barrel rate, okay max EV. Like, he should have, had a little bit more power, I think, than he had. So I think there's more to scrape out of there, and I'm kind of excited about him still. I think that he's an interesting guy to draft. I also thought that more so than Soto, who I think is just really good no matter where he is. I thought it'd be interesting to kind of take a look at Alex Verdugo in his new digs. Verdugo is actually a guy who has both things in his toolbox. He pulls along the line and he pushes along the other line. He does both things. It's a pretty remarkably even spray chart as you're looking here. And, you know, with Boston, you see these blue doubles that are all lined up where the green monster is. And you might expect him to lose those hits in New York. However, I've overlaid this spray chart on top of New York. And, you know, I think he may lose some of those doubles that he peppered off the green monster, but not all of them. And some of those will turn into homers because the green monster is really tall and he did not hit a single homer over the green monster. So, you know, some of those turn into homers, some of those turn into outs, and some of the balls that he pulls along the left, which he does do sometimes, will turn into homers. I see right now, eight gray dots that are outs last year that would be homers in Yankee Stadium. That is rock solid. You just add eight to his home run total. Done. No, I'm just kidding.
It's that easy. I was going to ask, though, over under on even the most optimistic home run projection, 15 from Zips, 12 to 13 from all the other systems over at Fangraphs. Let's just say 15 is the number. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over. I'm not saying he's going to hit 25 or anything, but I think like 17 is a good number. 17, 18. He's going to get some cheapies. I mean, he pulls the ball along the line sometimes. I see two balls right down there. That's the shortest part of Yankee Stadium. So, you know, and then you haven't even considered the secondary effects of seeing that short porch and seeing what he might do with his approach, given that kind of visual cue out there. So I think that the batting average is about even. And so I think he'll hit 270, basically, maybe 275. You know, he's likely to hit with runners on a lot. I mean, I guess he did that in Boston to some extent, but you know, he had a four year stint where he was hitting above 280, 290. So why not 275, 280 with 17 homers? I think I'd like Alex Verdugo. I've been taking him as my fifth outfielder in draft and holds. He's available late. If you like someone I know may have started your draft with Ellie De La Cruz and Francisco Lindor and Fernando Tatis and may have a 260 average going into the rest of the draft where everybody else is sitting with 280s, you may want somebody like Alex Verdugo late for your build as I will.
Yeah, I would love to see the average in OBP tick back up to where it was in that kind of 2019 to 2021 window for him. That'd be huge in this lineup.
He's still hitting the ball as hard as he did back then. He's even making more contact than he did back then. His ground ball and fly ball rates are not that different from what he did back then. I don't see a reason why he can't.
We had a few listener submissions for things we could use in place of oatmeal. I still think oatmeal makes more sense.
Well, but we were looking for upscale oatmeal.
We were looking for upscale oatmeal. And people said, why don't you just call oatmeal cheese pizza or burger and fries? And I'm like, both of those things are better than oatmeal. Buy a healthy large.
Well, then maybe they have our upscale oatmeal, burger and fries.
That's just not a good.
What's Verdugo? Is he oatmeal or is he burger and fries?
I think he's oatmeal.
All right.
Oatmeal's good for you. Yeah. It's healthy, usually.
Oh yeah, burger and fries aren't. So that's yeah. It's not used. Yeah. It's not the
burger
same.
Burger and fries are fun.
Yeah.
Ellie's sort of picks that we love on paper
that's
that we're excited about.
Ellie's like an ice cream dessert.
All right, we got to stop comparing players to food. It's getting weird. Looking back here again at the bottom of this roster, I mean, Austin Wells, I thought they'd bring in a little more competition for him behind the plate, but it looks like there is a real window for him to carve out a large share of the playing time over the course of the season. I wonder if it's one of those things where he's more of a part-time guy in the first half, and over the course of the year, if the defense is where it needs to be, if the bat is ready, he starts to take on a larger share in the second half.
Yeah, and you know, I think the big thing to watch is the strikeout rate. All of the projection systems have a big increase over last year. You know, is there something that he can manage there? If that strikeout rate is any better than projections, then maybe he can hit 240 with, 15 to 18 bombs. Zips has a 228 average of 17 homers and 5 stolen bases over 475 plate appearances. I think the use case here is draft and hold third catcher. But interesting young player that I think, at 24 years old, there could be another level. Like, it may not be this year, but in a year or two, there are the sort of beginning blocks of a Will Smith situation here. I mean, in the minors, he had great walk rates. He had up and down strikeout rates. The barrel rate was good. The hard hit rate was good. So, there is a bit of a Will Smith starter package here.
Well, quick thought here on Jason Dominguez, too. You mentioned the return from Tommy John surgery. I think if you're in a league with IL spots, he could be a little bit forgotten about. He's worth drafting late, stashing on the IL. I think the payoff could be worth it. That way you're not using an early or mid-round pick on someone on the IL. You're throwing a late dart and getting some value once he comes back.
And then in draft and holds, he's going where prospects are going. And I love Dylan Cruz, and I think Dylan Cruz will have a great career, but I don't think that Jason Dominguez's upside is that much different than Dylan Cruz's. I'm pretty excited about Jason Dominguez, and you're just much more likely to get Jason Dominguez in the major leagues this year. So if it's a redraft draft and hold, and people are taking prospects, maybe that's the time to take Dominguez. One last point that I have for those deeper leagues is that DJ LeMahieu at 35 years old, he's not done yet. And as much as we think he's been injured, he has managed, 1600, 1700, maybe 1800 plate appearances over the last 3 years. So he goes out there and he plays many, many, many different positions, and he gets on base. He's going to have decent runs in RBI. He's a really good backup at two or three positions. Got that slash line eligibilities at different places. I mean, he's a pretty good draft and hold player. He's a definitely third base gets thinned quick. If you can get LeMahieu in there and then also be a backup at first, he's a pretty good player in that format.
Yeah, I've found a little more interest recently in LeMahieu and Jake Cronenworth. We didn't really talk a lot about on the Padres preview for similar reasons. They're just going to play more than you think.
MICI, so.
Yeah, nice to have some players you can move around a little bit. Let's take a look at the pitching. Garrett Cole, still there. Carlos Rodon, sitting kind of in the pick 150 range. I glitched out the spreadsheet, so I'll have to fix that. But Rodon, we talked about him a lot yesterday, has the new cutter he's working on. We're going to watch his velo very closely this spring. I think we're generally in at price right now. The question is, if he has a great spring and jumps up a few rounds, are we still going to be as excited as we are right now? The thing about Garrett Cole is really pretty simple. It's just a preference. Do you want hitter-pitcher or pitcher-pitcher up top? That's it for me. I don't see enough actual skills decline underneath the drop in K rate to be worried about him. I think he still deserves to be a top 20 overall pick in most leagues, especially in leagues that reward bulk. I'm in a league that is innings pitched instead of wins, the Tout Wars Solds League, as it's called. I love Cole even more in formats like that. But I guess this is my simple way of saying I trust the K rate to bounce back a little bit after the dip that we saw last season.
Yeah, 15.8 ADP, it's sort of amazing. You could get him in the second round. I would love that. Got a bat and then got Cole. I'm into that. Just a stud. I think downriver, Cortez and Stroman, those might be light ADPs. Stroman, I get it, because if you need Ks, he's well light in that category. So if you have a innings cap or, some sort of situation where you just, need those Ks, he's not the greatest idea. But Nestor Cortez has similar projection and more Ks, and gets drafted around the same 250 spot where you might as well take a shot on some of those guys. Clark Schmidt, Stuff Plus loves him, and so his projection is good. I continue to watch him against lefties and wonder how he's going to figure it out. What we have up here on the screen right now are his pitch numbers against lefties, and the sinker has a 417 slugging against lefties, which he kind of uses as a secondary pitch. That would only get worse if he threw it more. The sweeper has a 750 slugging against lefties. He should stop throwing that to lefties, I'm pretty sure. And the curve is still good. 177 batting average, 304 slugging. And then the cutter, which he has to throw so much and in fastball counts, had a 321 batting average and a 493 slugging. So this is all kind of terrible. And the heat map here is his sinkers against lefties, which he throws way too much in the zone. And per our Bassett conversation and some of our conversations with Trevor May about the two-seamer on Friday, I just feel like he needs to elevate that two-seamer more. And, you know, I think if he did something where he elevated the two-seamer and he threw the cutter up and the sinker up, if he threw the cutter and the two-seamer up and had that little banana action at the top of the zone and then threw way more curveballs low, then he could get people guessing up and down velo bands. And even if it was a hard pitch, they wouldn't know which way it was going if it was the cutter and the sinker. So I think there's entirely too much down in the zone for my likes there. But the curveball's a great pitch, should work against both sides. The cutter theoretically should work against lefties. You know, another option, which I've never seen him do, is just go 50-50 cutter curves. He doesn't seem to trust his arsenal to be good enough to do that. So if my second option is cutter sinkers, I don't know. I don't know what to do here. The pitching plus projections are pretty good. And that alone, where he's being drafted, I think he's a shot in the dark type pitcher for me.
I saw just a little bit of the Nestor Cortes start on Monday against the Twins. He looked like the pre-injury Nestor Cortes to me. I think that bodes really well. And if you remember, 2022, Nestor Cortes was a top 10 pitcher by earn value, right? He was worth more than $20 in a 15-team league, and he's going way outside the top 200 right now, pretty consistently in that 250 range. So you think about the quality of this team, projected to be the best team in the AL East, the stuff that Nestor Cortes has done, wins are going to be there. The ratios probably won't be that bad because the volume is solid. The K total will be good. I think he makes sense as just a solid like SP4, SP5 type. If you wait on pitching, he makes a ton of sense in that range.
Yeah. And especially if you look up and down your team and you have pitchers from bad teams, you may just want to take Cortes to maybe get you an extra win or two. It's something that happens to me all the time. I'm like, oh, I love all these sleepers. They're on the Royals and the. I mean, that's not a good example, but
No, it is. We'll get to the Royals in a minute. Well, they're getting better. They're trying. They have their
warts. I watched Clarke-Schmidt and Will Warren today in against the Rays. I thought Clarke-Schmidt still looked tentative against lefties. Josh Lowe got him for, I think it was a double. And he just was just sort of dancing around against lefties. Will Warren, I think his four-seam is better than Clarke-Schmidt's, and that's a big deal because Will Warren has the Michael King Clarke-Schmidt package where it's the sweeper and the cutter and the sinker. But Michael King's four-seam and change ended up being better than Clarke-Schmidt's, and that's pretty much so far the difference between Clarke-Schmidt and Michael King. So if Will Warren is more Michael King and less Clarke-Schmidt, Will Warren is the number six on this roster right now, and he's going to get 75 to 100 innings. And I've got a tweet here from, let's see here, his Prospect Tilt. And he says, using Eno Saris's new stuff, Stuff Plus, Location Plus, there were only five pitchers at AAA last year who had a Stuff Plus over 110 and a Location Plus over 98 with at least 400 pitches thrown and at least 80 pitches per appearance. Jarrett Jones and Will Warren were two of them, and the other three are Grayson Rodriguez, Gavin Williams, and Edward Cabrera.
Oh, people like those three guys.
Yeah, so Will Warren, good company. We also off air had a question about, you know, is Jarrett Jones going to make that Pirates rotation? He's up against Quinn Priester and Luis Ortiz, so has a really good runway there. Luke Weaver, I think, is Will Warren is depth in the minors. Luke Weaver is depth in the majors. He'll just be a guy in between the starting rotation and the bullpen maybe make a spot start. I think what they liked about what they saw with Luke Weaver was the slider is the best it's ever been by Stuff Plus. The changeup has always had decent results. And so, there's a chance here that it's one of the better mixes that he's had.
Yeah, this is a nice bullpen, as always, too. You think about Clay Holmes is probably an undervalued closer right now. Stuff Model loves him. They have alternatives. Holmes gets hurt, there could be a runaway good replacement for him. That's the thing that's kind of interesting about them from a fab perspective, if that situation arises.
Yeah, I think my favorite would be Loaisiga, but Loaisiga's had really bad health issues. And so I guess my favorite is who's healthy and pitching the eighth when Clay Holmes goes down. Because Ian Hamilton is also an interesting pitcher, throws a really interesting breaking ball. And there are some options down there.
The Pecota projection from Baseball Prospectus, 94.6 wins for the first placed Yankees. Too hot, too cold, or just right?
Too cold. I like a lot of what I see with the Yankees this year. In a Carlos Rodon bounce back, Juan Soto out there, another year of development for Volpe and Dominguez. I think this is a World Series contender.
I think that's true. All of that's true. And I still think it's too hot. I think it's that the rest of the division is a little bit better. They're going to keep the heat on. There's a sizable gap, actually, between the Yankees and the second place team in the division, which is kind of surprising to me given the way this division has shaped up in recent years. So I actually had them as a too hot, not because I think they're bad, but because I think this division remains very tough with the Jays, the Rays, and the Orioles all being playoff caliber teams as well. And Boston, you know, they're kind of the outlier right now, but we'll get to them in a couple of episodes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's move on to the Royals. It is getting better in Kansas City, and at least they're trying, man. At least they're spending money. At least they're doing things to make it look like they care. They get Bobby Witt Jr. the huge extension. They get a couple of young guys back with Vinny Pasquantino coming off of injury. You get a full season of Nelson Velasquez. Michael Garcia is really interesting. You got your old guy and Sal Perez still there kind of holding it together. I can start to look at this team and say, okay, they at least have a plan. They have some things they're trying to do. They have a couple things maybe they do better than others. This is a really interesting thing that you put together, looking at their young hitters. And it looks like they have good approaches for the most part, right? They have some things they're executing on as an organization that people might not have given them credit for previously.
Yeah, it's something that I call the secret sauce that I use to find my breakout young hitters and also the deep league sleepers for hitters, and basically takes a lot of stuff you hear on the show about zone minus O swing, which is being aggressive in the zone and passive outside the zone, swing strike rate as a nod to hit tool, barrel as game power, and max EV as raw power. Hard hits in there as well. Maybe I had this skewed too hard towards hard hit, but my bias is that if you have one thing in your toolbox and you're trying to make the major leagues, being able to hit the ball hard is probably the most important. that's something I believe wholeheartedly. And I think that the reason that this is teams are not cool with zero power at defensive positions. Other than the Guardians, there are very few teams that are willing to put a guy out there with like a 0.080 ISO, you know, like somebody with a less than 100 isolated slugging. That's just not what teams want to do. They want power from every position. And that was a big change from when I was watching the game in the 80s to now. We used to have Jeff Blausers and Mark Lemkes and Raphael Belliards. I was a Braves guy growing up. Those guys didn't have much power, and it was okay because they defended their position well. They did other things, whatever it was. Now the modern game demands power. So that's why I have three power metrics in there. Maybe that's too much. You can see with Pascantino that it dings him. He's the only guy I would consider part of their core that is a negative in the secret sauce. But I'm also willing to give him a little bit of an incomplete on that due to injury and due to his, the way that things have played out. And also, like, he has the best swing strike rate of their young group. So, you know, if you wanted me to weight that twice, he would probably end up as a positive by process. But all that said, Nelson Velasquez, Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez, Michael Garcia, Drew Waters even, Michael Massey, and Vinny Pascantino, if we give him a pass, they all basically are above average on process Z or secret sauce. And some of that's being aggressive in the zone. Some of it's hitting the ball hard. Whatever it is, I believe in their player development when it comes to hitting. I don't know how they could be so good at that part and then be so bad at the pitching side.
Well, we were also surprised looking at the park factors on Monday for strikeout and seeing Kauffman Stadium as one of the places that is actually pretty favorable to hit, right? That was a low K rate sort of place, not that far away from Coors Field. And that would also lend itself to getting a little more mileage out of your bats, right? It might be tough on your arms, might be hard to develop arms as a result of that, but you should start to see some benefits with these young hitters figuring a lot of things out. I think the guy we've talked the least about on this show is probably Michael Garcia. I'm starting to see and hear a little more about him in fantasy circles as someone that people really like to break out this year. And it makes sense because he has the max EV pointing at more power to come, right? We have some track record here where you could see, oh, hey, you know, maybe if he takes all the best things that he was doing in the minor leagues, he can actually unlock more of that power in the big leagues. I mean, with AAA in 2022, 7 homers in 40 games, had 12 steals to go along with it, right? That's a lot more power than the 4 we saw in 123 games of the Royals last year.
I think it also just, it has other benefits as well. Like, just hitting the ball hard. He had a 51% hard hit rate last year. Like, that's pretty good. And when you look at that .344 batting average on balls in play, that's partially because of the 51% hard hit rate. So even if he doesn't lift the ball much more, you know, given this raw power, given that hard hit rate, I could see him on, you know, launching 10 to 15 homers. If he can get that up to 10 to 15 homers and stealing 25 bags, and the batting average should be good because he hits the ball so hard, and his BABIP should be good, and he makes good contact. Like, it's not necessarily, it's funny, a lot of their players are not necessarily guys that I would circle in most leagues. I think, MJ Melendez and Michael Massey in particular are deep leaguers. I think those are guys you want in as sort of backups in draft and holds or in your AL only situations. Nelson Velasquez, you know, he's a lot like MJ Melendez, low batting average, high homers. So that might be true for him too. Garcia's right at that line where maybe it'd be interesting to take him as a bench piece in even a 12 team or a 15 team league. Hoping that maybe he adds shortstop eligibility, just filling in, because he's maybe even a better defender than Witt. And he played 14 games at shortstop last year. So, you know, if he can be a shortstop and a third baseman, back up some places and just get you a few steals on off days and get you a few more plate appearances, he's an interesting backup even in shallower leagues.
I mean, I see basically a Ke'Bryan Hayes offensive profile today with the possibility to do more, just as we've seen in Hayes for a few years. And it's come with a little less hype than there was around Ke'Bryan Hayes. Now, if you remember, Ke'Bryan Hayes came up and was red hot for a very small sample when he debuted. That kind of changed everyone's perspective of how much game power he might have. And we've been chasing it for a few years ever since. And maybe he's actually unlocked it. But I think that's the type of roto profile you're looking at with Garcia. And his glove, as you mentioned, is so good. He'll play. He'll play a lot on this team. I think they did a good job of adding a few veterans for the bench. I just hope they do a good job of keeping those veterans on the bench mostly. You look at it, guys like Adam Frazier. Like, Frazier's a good player. You need someone like that in real life to get through a full season. Hopefully they're not squeezing Garrett Hampson into the starting lineup more than once in a while. Like, if that's your worst bench player, you're fine. I think if you, you know, let it play out with guys like Waters and Kyle Isbell, you're more likely to find something good long term, just letting it happen with those guys as opposed to chipping away at their playing time with someone who doesn't hit the ball hard and really seems to offer a lot less of a floor.
Yeah. And like, I guess there's like, they want to be good. You know, they like want to get better. But I think in the idea of getting better, should be that focus on the young guys and giving them as many plate appearances as possible. I don't think that the future is here just yet, where you're like, no, we need to get Renfro in here against lefties. Stat.
I mean, they'll do that, but hopefully they don't play him too much against righties. Hopefully they're playing the right lineup. That's the thing I would hope for this team. They were 23rd in runs scored last year. I'll take the over on that. I think they'll improve. I think they'll get closer to the middle of the pack. If you told me they're going to be 17th, 18th in the league in runs scored this year, I could buy that sort of improvement. And by the way, Vinny Pasquantino started the Cactus League opener. He had shoulder surgery in June. Everything's been pretty positive throughout the winter. It looks like he is having a pretty, air quotes, normal spring, which may nudge that ADP up a little bit if he gets hot in Cactus League play, because people like the low K rate, you know, the possible average power run production combination that he brings to the table. My only concern is that the Royals may ease him back in the regular season, give him occasional days off that they wouldn't have if he weren't coming off of this injury. I think the thing that's going to make or break a Royals pleasant surprise this year is going to be the pitching. Cole Reagan's got a lot of airtime on our Monday show. I think that ADP, which is sitting at 110 right now, has an up arrow next to it for sure. That'll happen when you're throwing 101 in Cactus League play. You've talked a lot about Seth Lugo, how much you like that signing. There were probably a dozen teams you thought where he made a lot of sense given what he was going to get contract-wise. They also brought in Michael Wacha. It's still a little bit light in the rotation. Even if all three of Reagan's, Lugo, and Wacha stay mostly healthy and give you the better than expected outcomes, you still have to fill two more spots in this rotation. And we've talked about the struggles of Brady Singer in great detail. The location strategy with that two-seamer seems to be a big part of the problem. Where do they go, especially in those fourth and fifth starter spots, just to make this rotation work?
I think they just keep running out Singer and Lynch, and I don't really see hope on the way just yet in terms of prospect starting pitchers for the Royals. I've got, what do we got here? We've got...
Yeah, Jordan Lyles had a 1.24 whip last year, just came with a 6.28 ERA.
Mazzucato is funny. It's somebody that other people liked more when they saw him, and I thought he was kind of soft tossing, and they said he's projectable, and you know, he looks good out there, and the strikeouts are there, but awful walk rates for Mazzucato. So he really needs to take a step forward to be considered, I mean, a chance to make that big league rotation. Their other guy, Ben Kudma, was an A, high A last year, and none of them are ranked better than a 40 prospect value by Fangraphs. So there doesn't seem to be much in the coffers. So I think that they're just going to run those guys out there.
Yeah, it's just finding innings eaters. And that's what Lyles is. Lyles didn't make the card. But if you're the Royals, you hope you can get something out of Daniel Lynch. You hope you can get the good version of Brady Singer, or at least split the difference between the good version and the bad version. I just don't want to bet on that with my teams. It's a massive gap between his ERA in 2022 at 3.23 and what he did last season at 5.52. Just like two completely different pitchers. It's mind-boggling to see just how far apart those results are. What do you think happens in the bullpen?
You don't have my guy in there.
Which guy?
So James McArthur is probably the closer. And the Stuff Plus looks good there. And it's a okay. It's actually a pretty bad projection for a closer, 4.18 ERA. What's hiding underneath that Stuff Plus is that his fastball, his four-seam fastball is below average by Stuff Plus. So he's got like this elite curve that he throws 50% of the time, but not a great fastball. Does that describe a lot of closers that you know? Elite secondary pitch that they use a lot? I mean, it's like kind of like old school Sergio Romo.
That description always makes me think of more like a Matt Whistler type. Someone that just throws.
That's what I'm saying.
Not 80% sliders.
A closer. So as much as I think James McArthur's all right, Nick Anderson's four-seam fastball had like a 45 Stuff Plus when I looked at it today. Chris Stratton's is around league average. Carlos Hernandez, man.
I love Carlos Hernandez. I didn't leave him off the card to hurt you. He's been shut down. He's got a shoulder thing going on right now. No, they gave him a cortisone injection. So I left him off because I figured if I did and you wanted to talk about him, you just bring him up.
Life is not fair.
And because for one reason or another, they just haven't put him in that spot. Only four saves last year. They had a window to do it. I hope they still do.
It's not great command.
This looks like a mess of a bullpen. Maybe it's better in terms of just the depth options, but if they settle on one closer, it doesn't mean that person's going to keep the job.
I guess as things stand now, Stratton is a very, very, very mild sleeper.
Like AL labor for a dollar or AL labor in reserves?
I mean, reserves is not a great place to put a reliever, so watch list.
Yeah, watch list seems a bit safer. If you had to bet on it, I mean, geez, Schreiber, maybe the guy they traded for just recently, like maybe that's their angle. But this is a watch the news and likely avoid situation unless you really are desperate for saves, because it doesn't look great right now for the Royals in that bullpen unit. A team on the rise though. And Pecota has a 70.6 win total projected for the Royals. So I'll ask you, the too hot, too cold, or just right for the Royals?
Too cold. Those bats start to come to life. They win some games, 8-6.
Yes, they outhit their pitching. Cole Reagans has a Cy Young caliber season.
And wins 11 games.
Lugo and Waka are solid. And then the back end guys are a mess.
Some of the problems you're listing are like problems that most of the league shares.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are we doing at 4-5? And is our bullpen good? That's like the bottom third. So bottom third of the league is not like 70 projections. That's probably one of the worst in the big leagues, right? I don't think they're one of the worst like 3 or 5 teams in the big leagues, actually.
I don't think they are either. And I agree with you that it was too cold. I think 75 wins at least is in the cards for the Royals, but they could be even a notch or two better than that.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man of the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man of the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want to talk about a bad team?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You want to talk about a team that is one of the worst 3-5 teams.
This would be the point if you have small children in the car listening to the podcast with you. You are excused. You may turn this off. Young children should not be exposed to the 2024 Chicago White Sox. Because they're just not good. They might be kind of like a watchable sort of disaster team.
It might be so bad. It'll be interesting. You have to tune in to see what's going on this year. You know, they're so bad that I recently, you know, that Elia De La Cruz that I took in the third round in TGFBI? Mm-hmm. Some part of it was because the White Sox are so bad. I did not want to take Luis Robert. I don't want to take Luis Robert because if they're so bad, just imagine he has like a little nick and he's like, oh man, I don't, you want me to go out there right now? On this hamstring?
We had him featured on the graphic if you're watching on YouTube, and he looks like he's not thrilled with the projections of his teammates. He's like looking at it. And he's like, what is happening? How did this get so bad so quickly? There's a couple things here though, that I think are worth breaking down. I think
there's always opportunity.
Luis Robert could be trying to just hit his way out of Chicago. Like if he has that as his internal monologue on a day-to-day basis, and that just keeps him going even when things are just all around ugly for this club, we could see an amazing season for a historically bad team. He has the skills to do that.
Yeah.
I think the question I have is, how much of a supporting cast will he have given the injury history of Eloy Jimenez, who outside the top 200 is actually a pretty good value? I'm tempted at the price by where Eloy is going right now. Andrew Vaughn, is there another level from him? Possibly. The projections like him as someone that might be a little underpriced right now, because we see these bottom five or even bottom three teams, we hold our nose and say, there's just no way these guys are going to score enough runs or drive in enough runs. They're going to hurt my production. That can happen, but if the price is this low and you're stacking them up against guys that will lose playing time on better teams.
It's an argument against Robert. Another argument against Robert is like, what is runs and RBI totals going to be like? Sure.
Relative to other early round bats, I think they will likely come in a tad light. So he has to make up a lot of ground in homers and steals, which he's certainly capable of doing. He's going around like pick 30, pick 35. It's not absurd.
Yeah.
But I understand, like, this could be a real bad team that then gets worse over the course of the season, because if Eloy is healthy and productive for 4 months, he becomes a trade chip. Yeah, and Robert's contract is so good, they may want to keep him through the rebuild. Like that might be the downside for him, is that they don't get enough value back in a trade and they just ride it out with him for these next couple of years.
I want guys off this team at just the most reduced prices. And that does exist. Benintendi, I think you're getting to him, is a good example of oatmeal that's, you know, on very cheap pricing.
Yeah. Oatmeal with no frills. I mean, it's the plain oatmeal where you got to put your own stuff in it. You got to put your own raisins or dried cranberries or pecans or whatever you like to put in your oatmeal.
Really good sixth outfielder in a draft and holds, I feel like.
Yeah.
Just stick them in, get some steals, some homers, and then get them out of there as soon as you can.
So,
and Juan Moncada actually fits the same bill. Nobody wants these guys. They're super, super cheap. And they are decent veteran guys who are going to play, and so therefore are really good backups in those types of leagues where you need a backup.
I think we at least saw Moncada recover from a miserable 2022, like partway.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of upside in there too, yeah.
If he gets the K rate back down, if he can walk a little bit more, we've seen him run a little bit in the past. Like he's shown stuff in the past. The barrel rate last year, 10.1%, was at the higher end of his range. I think you're right. There's still something here for deeper leagues. Colson Montgomery, he missed so much time last year with injury. I don't know if they'll let him debut
It's a walk year for Moncada, too.
Oh, it is a walk year for Moncada. I don't know if they'll actually let Montgomery come up until late August to then preserve the possibility of getting draft pick compensation if he's a rookie of the year in 2025. So I think that's, for me, Montgomery is more of
September.
He's more of an AL-only reserve than a mixed league reserve right now, just because I don't think we're going to see him very soon.
I mean, what if it's not September? Is we bring him up in September, he gets his feet wet, and then we can still try and get rookie of the year the next year, right?
Right. I think that's how they're going
to
play it.
If they wanted to say, what would be the reasoning for Colson Montgomery to come up earlier? Paul DeJong is bad? Well,
we'd have to learn that.
Yeah,
we know that already.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to learn that. The team. The other one would be the team is going well, and we want to put some chips in. Which I just
if they're the 2023 Pirates in the first month of the season,
and then they call up Montgomery. Yeah,
they call up Montgomery. Like, hey, let's capture this momentum. I have no problem with that if they think
he's
ready.
Weird, man. Like stuff like that happens. I guess it's possible.
Just play the best players. Why can't you just play the best players? It's not that much of an ask. Of the bottom half of this group, Oscar Colas, DeJong, Dominic Fletcher, Nicky Lopez, Max Stassi. I think in deep two catcher leagues, Stassi could be kind of interesting. Probably an AL only mostly.
He could start to push his way. Like if he's had a really interesting backstory where it's just been really difficult for him and his family. And that's why he missed all of 2020-23 just dealing with those issues. And I have to think that it affected him in 2022 too. Like, so if you go back all the way to 2021, you had a guy who was hitting the ball with authority and walking enough to offset his strikeout rates. And that is somebody that could be more offensively valuable to this team than Martin Maldonado. So, you know, it's not impossible that he pushes his way into a starting role by the end of the season.
I think I saw a headline that Maldonado apologized for not running out of ground ball in the Cactus League. It's like, don't blow out a hammy and end your career for this. Not worth it.
No. Dominic Fletcher supposedly is the leading candidate. Daryl Van Schuwen of the Chicago Sun-Times reports, which makes mincemeat of my Oscar Colas Lodum call. But it doesn't make Dominic Fletcher any better of a hitter. I would say that you can just replace Colas with Fletcher in the Lodum as just a guy who may play a lot and may hit 240 with 10 homers.
Yeah. 240 and 10. That's a common expectation for a lot of the depth players that they've got up and down this roster. They brought in Kevin Pillar. Doesn't really get me all that excited. You know, Gavin Sheets just seems like a guy. If they're gonna go full Lodum, full Young, like Young air quotes, play Zach DeLoach, see what happens. Like play the guys that we don't know about. Don't play the guys that we've seen enough of and are pretty convinced are not that good.
First year general that's my manager plea. Though, dude.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you can tell in a few instances that things are a little different right now in Chicago. They still have Dylan Cease at this point. And I think you like him quite a bit where he's been going, right? Even if he stays with the White Sox for half or even all season, do you think he's pretty consistently undervalued going just outside the top 100 overall?
I do think so. I took a peek into, you know, what was going on last year, and I think there's been some sort of falling off of his curveball. And the curveball became more similar than his slider, sideways, and he didn't command either his fastball or his slider at an above average rate, which shouldn't surprise anybody, but there's just so much stuff there that I think just a little tweak to the curveball can get him back to being a three-pitch pitcher. Just the projections alone are good. He's a high strikeout rate pitcher that can get 28-30% strikeout rates for you. And he's going where you can take him as your third starting pitcher, which I think is kind of ideal. You know, I've got him around where I have Hunter Green and I see them very similar, which is like, you could be an ace or you could be somebody I have to drop, But by the time I'm picking my third starting pitcher, I think people are telling themselves stories if they think their third and fourth starting pitcher, they're 100% sure that those guys are going to get through the whole season with them.
Yeah, this is something to behold. I mean, Eric Fetty actually is kind of interesting because there were other teams that wanted him coming back from the KBO.
The pay grade suggests he's a little bit higher than Lindblom when he came back.
Yes. And so I noticed something. I looked back at least through the Fangraphs stats for the KBO. Fetty has the highest K-minus BB percentage in a season of anybody I've seen in the KBO in like the last 20 years, which is kind of interesting because there have been some pretty good pitchers that have been there, that have come over and had success. His arsenal's completely different. It's kind of like when the Diamondbacks were bad and Merrill Kelly broke in. It's sort of like that. There could be usage here.
So what he did was he developed a sweeper and a sinker to go along with his four seam, and he also changed his changeup grip. The case against for me is pretty simple, which is his four seam was one of the worst four seamers in all of baseball when he was here. So even if he comes back, if he's still throwing that four seam, even if he comes back with a good sinker and sweeper, he may have trouble against lefties unless this changeup is amazing. And even if this changeup is amazing, what's the hard thing he's going to throw against lefties? Am I getting that right, or is Fetty a lefty?
Fetty's a righty. No, I think you're asking the right questions. In the most difficult matchups, what is he really going to do? How are the most difficult matchups still not going to be a problem for him, even if he's better than he was when we last saw him in the big leagues?
Yeah, and I don't think that park is super forgiving, at least when it comes to homers. So, you know, I don't know. And he's not going to get any wins. So, you know, you have to kind of bake that into your... I mean, he's got 20 wins in the KBO last year. I'd be happy if he got 6 wins this year.
Jeez, that's a rough outlook. The Michael Kopech story, to me, is mostly health. If he's healthy, he actually could be sort of interesting as a late flyer.
Also, that command... Look at that location plus number. We've got it up right now. 94.7 for Kopech, 97.9 for Cease. Like, if you think Cease has some of the worst command among starters, then maybe Michael Kopech's not a starter.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of another part of it. And it may be related to the knees. Maybe if the knees are ever good, the command goes up.
Yeah, that would be... It'd be nice to see it. I mean, I think when he's been good, he's shown some pretty interesting flashes. The last question I have for you with the White Sox, I mean, this is where I think they could be a little more fun than people expect. If Michael Soroka gets back to doing some stuff he did at the beginning of his career or finds a new path to success.
Yeah, so supposedly he's throwing he started throwing a four seam and was had like really altered his mix. So, and was throwing like more four seams, sliders, going for more strikeouts. So I think Soroka is just a big question mark that my model's not really going to help you on. And you might as well, if you like him, then take a shot on him if it makes sense for you.
Why not? Where he's going, I guess, would be the attitude. So you look at guys like Soroka, Garrett Crochet, who probably makes more sense in the bullpen than as a starter. They seem kind of back and forth in his role. Jake Eater, who they got in the Jake Berger trade, another year removed from Tommy John surgery. He could be kind of interesting. Prelander Baroa, if he could throw strikes, he could be filthy. Guys like Jordan Leisure and Nick Nastrini. Nastrini's not even on the screen right now. They all have ways of, you know, making themselves useful arms and having clear opportunities here. And on better teams, they wouldn't have had that. So I think that's the part of this roster that's actually the most kind of fun in a grotesque sort of way to watch.
I've always, you know, enjoyed the A's and, you know, teams where, you know, there's a clear shot at them. And you're saying this is Jordan Leisure's fastball. Let's see that again one more time. It's nice. He didn't have a good year in the minors last year, but if they're committed to stretching out Prelander Baroa and making him a starter, I could see him not making the big league roster right away. He still has options. So if it's like, you know, oh, we're going to give Garrett the first shot at this, but we want you to continue to stretch out, so we're going to send you to the minors. That seems like a maybe likely situation, given that John Brebbia is the guy they brought in to be the closer with the capital C. And that gives you an opportunity for Jordan Leisure to be the setup guy. And Brebbia is interesting because, you know, he throws like a pretty good fastball and a pretty good slider with pretty good command. That's not normally how you describe your closer. That's why I wanted to just show that Leisure fastball, because I was like, that's the fastball of a closer. And of course, Baroa could be it. Leisure could be it. I'm a little bit more excited about any of these guys than the Royals guys we were talking about. So Credit to them to like finding some live arms and giving them opportunity. It may just be Brebbia gets, you know, 18 saves with a 4.2 ERA this year, and they keep everybody else cheap and, you know, whatever it is. Maybe this is just names to sort of stash away. But Baroa and Leisure, I think, will end up ninth inning people for some team, for this team eventually. So that's where I would kind of stash those names in my head.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm at least going to keep an eye on these arms early in the season, because many of them will be free agents in our leagues, and one or two could actually pop as useful deep league starters because they either had interesting stuff in the past or have interesting stuff and now have an opportunity to actually contribute with some big league innings. Pecota has 65.7 wins on the White Sox, last place in the AL Central. Too hot, too cold, or just right?
I guess it's just right. I'm tempted always with the extreme teams to say, you know, worse if it's a bad team, worse than projections, because they'll trade people away. But it's not actually, I guess, yeah, I guess the use case, the idea is Dylan Cease gets traded. They're on pace for 65 wins and Dylan Cease gets traded. They lose that extra couple of wins that they could have gotten out of him. I'm going to say just right, I guess.
I'm going to go too hot. I think they're quite
a bit worse. You think they're worse than that? Okay.
They might be worse than the
A's. Well, 65 is pretty bad. I mean, 98 losses? Bad. 97 losses?
Oh, they're getting to 100 losses.
All right. I've
seen some 100-loss teams, and
this is what it looks
that's
like.
That's a 100. I know them when I see them.
you're bringing in Nicky Lopez for a starting position and
Paul DeYoung. Sorry, Paul.
You're Nicky Lopez and Paul DeYoung.
You're shooting for the 100 loss team if that's what you're doing. We are going to go. A quick reminder as we sign off, theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels gets you in the door with a subscription, $2 a month for the first year. If you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to hit the like button on this video. Thanks for making it all the way to the end. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. We've got another live stream coming up with Trevor May on Friday at 1 o'clock Eastern. Find Eno on Twitter at EnoSaris. Find me at Derek Van Riper. Find the pod at Rates and Barrels. That's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We're back with you on Thursday.
Thanks for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.